give me one shot here on a blue chip stock, believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're gonna have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is gonna go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of the DraftDak NBA Draft Podcast. Season 2 rolls on with a more traditional episode where we've actually gone in depth and watched some high school tape again. My name is Corey Tulliba. I am your host, and I am here as always with Albert Garbage Time Gim. Albert, how we doing today, dude?
Still feels foreign to hear the new name. But man, I'm excited, dude. I'm really thankful that you picked these two guys to talk about, just because, I mean, obviously, like, you know, Bates made a lot of news this week or the last couple of weeks. And so there's a lot to talk about. But man, these guys are going to be really fun to watch. And like, I do want to say, Corey, like, I know we watched them the high school tape, but I can't wait till we see them play in college. And I feel like we're going to have a lot more to say then.
Oh, no doubt about it. And you know what? I had a real big internal struggle when naming this episode. I could not decide between Memphis's penny stocks or Memphis's blue chips. It's, you know, because I look, the penny, it's the play on words, right. Penny Hardaway, but they're blue chips. Penny was in blue chips. It was a big struggle, but we are covering the Memphis recruits for this class. We have Amani Bates, as Albert mentioned, made news over the last few weeks, choosing to play at Memphis, and Jalen Duren. Both guys are a little bit younger, both reclassified to play college basketball this season. However, Jalen Duren is eligible for this upcoming draft. Amani Bates is just a few months younger than Jalen, but not eligible for this draft. So, it's going to be interesting with Bates to see if he goes 2 years in college because of the NIL rules now, or if he goes to college this year and then spends a year, you know, in some professional league. But that's a bridge we will cross when we get to it. I want to start with Jalen Duren. Big man, just 17 years old, so super young, 6'10", 230, with a reported 7'5" wingspan.
Oh, my freaking God.
Yeah. Oh my God, is right. 14.3 points per game, 8.4 rebounds, 2.2 blocks, 63% from the floor as a junior at Montverde last year. His shooting splits were unavailable. Helped Montverde win the championship, 25-1. Stock price preseason. Obviously, we don't have anything to compare it against, but ESPN has him as their fourth overall prospect. SB Nation has him at 8. Tankathon has him at 4. And Bleacher Report has him at 5. That's an average price of 5.25 for the very big man. Now, Albert, before I have you give me your take on how to evaluate his average stock price, I just want to run off a list of bigs taken in the top 10 over the last 5 drafts. Evan Mobley, only true big in the top 10 just this past draft. Wiseman and Okongwu in 2020. Jackson Hayes in 2019. Ayton, Bagley, Triple J, Bamba, and Carter in 2018. The year of the big man there.
Jesus.
Isaac and Zach Collins in 2017. Mm-hmm. Bender, Chris, Pirtle, and Thon Maker in 2016.
Jesus Christ.
The return on bigs in the top 10 has not necessarily been the best over the last 5 years. So, Albert, with that said, and I know we haven't watched in depth all of the guys in this upcoming draft, even that are ranked preseason in this top 10, but just based on what you've watched, do you think it makes sense that his stock price is set at 5.25?
You know, Corey, I do want to kind of preface all this by saying, like, what we're trying to do right now with this whole preseason evaluation of these kids coming out of high school, somebody needs to give us an award for this. Like, no one else is doing this crap, and it is really hard. Like, Corey, honestly, like, you give me a lot of tough assignments, but trying to evaluate these guys, like, watching them play in high school and like AAU stuff has been this has been hard. It's been really hard because like the structure of these games are disgusting.
It's terrible.
Like, honestly, it is so nasty. I have no idea what they're running, what they're trying. Like, sorry, the easy answer is they're not running anything. No. And it's just, they're just free balling basketball in all the game tape that I watched. Anyway, to answer your question, as difficult of a question as it is, I can understand why he's in that five range. I mean, you mentioned it. The measurables are unreal. Like, I just don't under, like, that's a human being. I don't get it.
And he's 17.
He's 17. He's only going to get bigger. And like, you watch him play, like, he's physically unreal already. Like, his chest is huge. Shoulders are gigantic. Yeah. It makes no sense. But beyond that, the one thing I do want to say, though, is like, if you consider the measurables plus him playing against kids that he'll never play against again, you can understand why he's going at five. So preseason off of high school and AAU tape, it makes sense that he's being rated the way that he is right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, whether or not he kind of drops a few spots or what, I mean, those measurables are just unteachable. And I can't even imagine what this kid's going to look like 4 or 5 years in the league when he's coming off that rookie contract based on how he looks now. You know, it's almost hard to even think about like the games that we're watching, like some of those terrible AAU games, you know, were from this year. But like, you know, I went and watched some of the Montverde stuff and he's a baby. You know, and I watched some of the Roman Catholic high school stuff where he went before Montverde when he's like 16 years old, and he is like significantly more physically developed than Evan Mobley is like coming out of college. It's kind of insane. So I totally get the height. The trend, obviously, in the NBA is that big men like Durin aren't necessarily taken this high, but, you know, we'll get into that as we go through the scouting report. Let's start at the offense, and let's start kind of with what I believe his strength will be. What do you think he's going to look like as a pick and roll big man next year in college?
So Corey, I just want to start off with the comp that I came up with in my mind, what I wrote down in my notes. At this point, he's Optimus Prime. If you watch any of the Transformers movies and you watch how Optimus Prime walks around and he operates, it is not very smooth. Jalen Duren right now, offensively, is not some beautiful Mona Lisa type of fluidity right now. Some of the offensive stuff, like when you watch him, it's like, well, there are many steps to what you're doing there. And, you know, it's kind of like the stuff that you talk about, like when you could see someone like processing in their minds, you see a lot of that with Durin. So for me right now, my initial take is that, you know, offensively, there's a long, long way to go, but that's normal. And that's not a slight against him. He is 17 years old. So for a 17-year-old, I understand. But I mean, just if I'm being objective about it, I see Optimus Prime is kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, in the pick and roll, you know, this is where I think if he gets with the right partner at Memphis, mm-hmm. I feel like he could shine here because it's a simple set. Like you said, there is a little bit of rigidity to him. And I think there are also flashes of really smooth footwork. And when he's decisive with his movements, it looks really smooth, fluid. And so that's certainly there, too. But like as a rim runner, as a pick and roll lob threat, I think he has the potential to be one of these guys that could be elite at that. Like, he'll finish at a really high clip.
Right.
He's a crazy athlete. Like, he's just a monster athlete, right? And I think that a lot of times you would see him set a screen and he makes good contact. He's one of those kids, he doesn't open up the right way. You know, he doesn't open up like he's boxing out and seal his man. But he at least is making contact on the screens. And then when he's at the rim, there's a gravity there. And you know, obviously high school, AAU, it's not the same level of talent that you'll see in college, but like the AAU, there's, you know, these are all high ranked recruits that he's playing against in the EYBL still. And they're trying to keep him off the rim. And you see a lot of times how easily that opens up lanes for the guards to come in and drop in a little floater or something, because he demands that kind of attention near the rim. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how he plays in pick and roll, because again, I think he's going to have some success in that area. The other area, you know, where I think he's shown some stuff is in the post. He's got that smooth little over the left shoulder, a little baby hook. I watch him finish through contact. There's times where the touch is there. There's times where it's not, but I think he certainly is going to be a guy that Memphis can kind of lean on to get a basket down low. Now with that said, like, we're talking about a post move here. What are you predicting the dialogue is going to be about this kid when seemingly like his best isolation move is a post move, in projecting how like we're going to talk about him in the context of that in the NBA? Because this is not how NBA teams play unless you're Nikola Jokic.
Well, Corey, okay, one thing that I did want to say, first off, I didn't even answer your question in the previous segment about the pick and roll. That's my bad. I was so caught up in the Optimus Prime thing. But I do want to say, I agree with you. Like, yeah, like the post up stuff is kind of his bread and butter right now. But the one thing that I did notice from watching him play was that he did have moments where he wanted to face up and he wanted to take a jump shot. Now, did those decisions bear a lot of fruit? The answer to that is, you know, so, but I like the fact that he's in that headspace. You know, I think, now some scouts may look at him and be like, oh, he's just a post player, but I don't think that's where his mind is at. I think he is thinking about what you just talked about, like the modern NBA, where the league is trending, how centers are trending. You mentioned Jokic, you think of Embiid, you think of even a DeAndre Ayton, right? DeAndre Ayton has really blossomed in his game, and he can hit a little 12-footer, you know, 14-footer, right? So I think that's in his mind, because watching some of these games, you know, he was facing up. He was taking some jump shots. Was it the prettiest? No. But I think if he's in that headspace and it's something that he's going to work on, I think that's encouraging, because it's you know, he's showing signs of that. There was some like dribble handoff stuff that I saw that I was like, okay, like even when we did the pod with Tyler Rucker, I believe I brought up Bam. Yeah. And the reason why I brought up Bam was because I saw some of that. You know, there was some of the dribble handoff stuff, some passing in there. Not that he is at the level of Bam with the passing, but I just like the fact that at the age of 17, and once again, guys, please don't judge us for judging 17-year-old boys, that, you know, it's all a part of the process, right? But at that age, the fact that he's in that headspace and he's attempting to do other things rather than just post up, I think that's going to be enough for him in year one at Memphis, where I'm hoping he's going to try some stuff. Like, you know, we think about Isaiah Jackson last year at Kentucky. He tried things, you know, and is that going to be his bread and butter in the NBA? We don't know yet. But the fact that he tried things, it led us to believe that there's a little bit more of a higher ceiling with him. And with Jalen Duren, if he's in that headspace and he's going to try those things, then I think the potential is definitely there.
Yeah, and he's going to have to try things, because, right, currently he's a non-shooter, right? No one's going to – you're going to leave him open if he's – spotting up behind the three-point line.
Yeah,
but the free throw form doesn't look, you know, terrible. Like, it's workable. There's definitely something there, and I, like you said, I think he could be a face-up threat, because he could be quick and he could be athletic going up against some of these bigs he'll see in college. And if he learns how to take guys off the dribble with using like his athleticism, his first step, you know, he can be a guy that could be a handful going to the rim. So that is going to be something worth monitoring. And then, like you mentioned, Isaiah Jackson, if he could show that he could not necessarily step out and hit the three-point shot, but if he could step out and hit a little elbow jumper, that could be, you know, huge in projecting him forward. You know, we right. saw that, like, Okongwu didn't stretch the floor as a freshman at USC, but he did take some little, you know, mid-range 15-footers. And you were kind of encouraged, like, all right, maybe one day, it'll be a process, but maybe one day, like, we could see the shooting come to fruition. Even with Bam, when you mentioned Bam, I talked about how, like, I'm surprised that Bam hasn't extended his range yet, because I think that he's capable. It takes time with some of these bigs. not all these bigs come in shooters, and it, when they don't do that, it does take time. But we've seen that these bigs, you know, as nice as it is to have them stepping out of the three-point line, you could still have success when you're in the right team construct. Capella just signed an extension with the Hawks. Capella's been huge for them, right? Noel with the Knicks. I mean, Nerlens can't shoot, but he played a monster role because, you know, he was a finisher and a guy who you can count on defensively. So there's certainly an avenue for this kid to be a high impact player. And again, as you mentioned, we're basing this off of AAU and high school and whatnot. So the real analysis is going to be when we do Duren's episode after he's played college games. Mm-hmm. But doing this evaluation early in the process is definitely interesting to see how these guys have been ranked the way they are and what these guys need to work on and the skeleton that they have of a skill set that they could see. So that's going to be interesting. Mentioning Bam, one of the things that Bam didn't show in college much, but has been an absolute beast at in the league is his passing. So what did you think of Duren as a passer in the games that you watched?
You know, as I mentioned before, there's some dribble handoff stuff that he was doing that, you know, I felt like he showed some savvy. There are a couple of times where he had it in the post, and I thought he did a decent job of reading the double team and understanding where the open man was. And he found the open shooters on whether it was on the weak side or, you know, sometimes even in the dunker spot, he'd find somebody. But, you know, it's not I didn't see anything that was like, you know, jaw-droppingly amazing in terms of vision. But at the same time, I didn't see him as a black hole either. Which is encouraging, right? Like ultimately, if you have a 17-year-old kid who has some court awareness, who has some awareness of the weak side, who has some awareness of, you know, the double team and how to deal with that at that age, that's stuff that he's going to keep getting coached up on. You know, Rashid is, you know, assistant coach at Memphis now. I'm sure he'll get a lot of coaching and mentoring on that and how to deal with that. And I think, you know, there were some promising signs, at least from what I saw.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think he's ever going to be a primary creator, right? But I think he has some potential in like read and react situations. You mentioned, you know, if he's getting doubled, he was able to kind of anticipate it sometimes. Not always perfect. He definitely work to do. I think he, you know, if you put him in the short role eventually, I think maybe he's going to be able to make, you know, reads to that weak side, you know, once he gets some reps doing it. And I thought that he had some real nice moments passing out of like high low actions when he was playing with another big in some of these games. But you know, it was hit or miss, is up and down. Like there were times where he looked like he had great touch. And then there were times where he was kind of firing the ball at his teammate when he was kind of close to him, or he overthrew them trying to like make an outlet pass in transition. So it's all gonna ebb and flow. And you mentioned like some of the games we're watching him play AAU where he's trying to throw these long outlets and it's like so sloppy up and down. Just it's tough to watch. But, you know, some of the games with Montverde where he's playing with, you know, a Kalo Houston or a Langston Love, you know, guys who are going to Michigan, Baylor, you know, these high rank recruits that, you know, Montverde gets, like it was a little more structured in that regard. And you saw him play that way, you know, like the pace of the game fit his style. I think he could play up and down certainly, but he's also a guy that is able to kind of slow down the pace and not really play outside of himself if, you know, the offense dictates that. Anything else that you want to touch on for Jalen Duren offensively?
Offensively, I mean, I don't know if this counts as offensively, but like his offensive rebounding. I mean, I thought he was active, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a good job of using his size, especially against smaller guys. I like when bigs are active on the offensive boards. Not that I'm some like Enes Kanter stan or anything like that, but there is a measure of that I think is important. You know, when we look at Capella, like Capella was like the best rebounding big in the league, you know, and he just got a huge bag, as you mentioned. So I think it was important. I like that he was engaged offensively, that I didn't see a lot of moments where he was kind of like, you know, like wishy-washy or like disappearing or anything.
Floating.
The floating part. Like, I like the fact that if he didn't get the ball and somebody else put up the shot, he was engaged in crashing the boards. And I think that's an important thing that sometimes gets overlooked.
Totally. And I think he was more active on the offensive glass than the defensive glass. You know, cause one of the things, you know, just sticking with his rebounding is like, he's a kid who's 6'10", 7'5" wingspan, 230, some bounce to him. Mm-hmm. Nobody else is stacking up to him like right. that physically, right? So, like, I felt like a lot of times on the defensive end, he was doing what he was doing on the offensive end, which is just trying to jump for the board.
Mm.
And, you know, I think a lot of times offensively, it's easier to make that just jump and be more athletic move and not have it cost you. Cause if you jump and you miss, like, you just get back on D or whatever. Defensively, I felt like he did that too. And, like, obviously his rebounding numbers were, you know, pretty fine. You know, he averaged 8 rebounds a game at Montford. But I felt like he didn't box out nearly enough. And when you go up a level, he's still going to be bigger and stronger than most of the kids that he goes up against in college. But it's not a good habit to develop where you're jumping for the board and not putting on a body consistently, because they, even though he might be stronger, like, the kids in college are going to be stronger than the kids were in high school. And then when you get to the league, now he might not be that much stronger, at least right away. So it's better to develop those habits. I want to see him box out at the next level a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Sheed being there, hopefully that'll, you know, be a step in the right direction for him, teaching him how to do a lot of the big men things. Cause in a lot of ways, Duren is kind of more of an old school type big than, you know, your new school big when you're, you know, drawing it up. But, I kind of like that sometimes he could grab and go. You know, he's not going to be a guy that I want leading the break all the time, because I don't think he's got the decision-making skills as a passer in transition to do it. But I like that he can, like, dribble the ball without having it bounce off his foot and go out of bounds. So at least he can, like, get it, go, hit an outlet or something without trying to make, like, a flashy pass. I did like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I think he's somewhere in between Lamar Odom and Kendrick Perkins, which is not a bad place to be, you know.
Yeah, perhaps the single weirdest scale to be between in the history of basketball.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You do it for the listeners.
Right.
What do you? How do you think his perimeter defense looked?
So actually, that I was waiting for that one, Corey, because I think that was the part that maybe we saw things differently, but I was actually really excited by that. I was like, wow, that's what I want to see more of on the next level in college. I hope he's in more of those circumstances and situations, because I want to see how that develops, because there were some really promising moments. I was watching this AAU game where he was playing against Bronny James, and I was like, oh, look at that. Like, he was moving his feet. He's got his hands up. He did a good job of staying in front of me. He forced Bronny into a couple, like, tough, like, just, you know, settling for three-pointers. And I was like, I like that. Like, I really, really like that. Not to say that I'm saying that he's, like, going to be some amazing perimeter defender, but for him to be doing that in high school and to show that he had, like, a court awareness, you know, I thought he did a good job of staying in front of him, not fouling, being active with his hands. Like, all of that I really enjoyed. So, I don't know, more than anything else, like, for me, when I look at him and his ceiling, I'd be like, dude, that is really exciting if he continues to grow in that area. Because if you've got it now, remember, Corey, he may grow till 7 foot. He's got a couple years of growing left. Imagine he gets to, like, 7 foot with, like, a 7'6" wingspan, and he can move like that and guard on the perimeter like that. That's freaking terrifying. So for me, that was actually one of the more exciting aspects of his game.
Yeah, that's a scary thought, that he still possibly has room to grow because he is so fucking young. I agree. This is where he kind of looks more like a modern big man. On the defensive side, it seems like he could do all the things you want your center to be able to do, right? I mean, you know, you mentioned, you know, hit the game against Bronny, but in some of these games, he's getting low in his stance, arms out. He's moving his feet. He's putting pressure on the ball handler. And with his size and his length, like, and his strength, like, you can't go into his chest. You can't bump him. He suffocates you, you know, and he's able to blitz. He's able to blitz you. I like the potential there defensively to just be a menace out on the perimeter with these guards who are going to be able to shoot it from deep at the next level. And I like that. If I think if you get him on an island, it could swing to your favor. You know, you're not going to lose much as long as the ball doesn't get into the hands of a big man on the guard. If there's a switch and everybody rotates properly, but I don't think you're going to get killed on that island. So I think that's exciting. And that switchability, that's what you want. You want guys who are going to be able to eventually, when we talk about him not going to Memphis, but to the NBA, potentially to one of these bad teams, you want to build around a guy that's going to be able to anchor a defense from every spot on the floor. And that responsibility is heavy, but I think that he at least has the baseline skills for that. You know, I what I liked about this exercise and what I like about the exercise that we're doing is that, you know, you do get to see kind of the development from year to year sometimes too, because, you know, switching over to him kind of in a team defense structure, the games I watched at Montverde, I felt like he made some really solid rotations. Some of the games that I watched at Roman Catholic, I felt like he was kind of in the wrong spot. AAU, I mean, I can't even say anything about that. Pass. But I liked that when the games were a little more structured, like, you see a little bit of progression on that end. So I think that this is where you're going to see that kind of rim protection, right? Like, in this team defensive structure, you're going to see the I think he's going to be a guy that you could totally run a drop in, and it's going to be terrifying how he could, you know, kind of stay at length, you know, drop back on the guards and still contest with the wingspan, but play the cat and mouse to get back to the big. What'd you see in kind of the team defensive structure, however little it may have been?
No, dude, honestly, I agree with you on the perimeter defense, the team defense. It's funny. I actually realized that the one area where we can't really grade him, in my opinion, is the one-on-one post defense. Like, yeah, that's something that we really just didn't see enough of from the tape, whether we're talking about in high school or in AAU, because, you know, I felt like a lot of the post defense that I watched was against guys that were smaller. You know, that guys that were really just like trying to punch above their weight, and
he's too strong.
It was just kind of embarrassing. And so, like, you know, if you just take that, you could be like, oh, he's great in the post, but like, I think it's unfair, and I'd rather give him an incomplete on that and wait till he gets to college. So in terms of like the team defense that you're talking about, I agree. You know, he's a really active, engaged guy. He moves really well. Something that I don't even think we mentioned offensively is I like his hands a lot. You know, I think he does a good job of engaging his hands. And then on offense, I thought he did a good job of catching balls. Yeah, I think he's got some pretty soft hands. And so I agree with you, man. I think there's a lot of potential there. I think we have to give an incomplete on the complete draft grade, because we have to see how he matches up against like 7-footers in college and against heavier guys, even against like a Drew Timmy. I'd like to see how that goes. Not that I'm saying he's going to get destroyed by Timmy, but I think that'll be a better test for us to get a better idea of him as like a holistic defender.
All right, Albert. Garbage time, Gim, as they call you on the internet. It's about that time for our man, Jalen Duren. Sell me this pen on Jalen Duren as a top 5 pick.
All right. What's a good way to put this? I think, for Duren, it's pretty simple. When it comes to his upside, when it comes to his potential for, like, we just talked a whole ton about his defensive stuff and how exciting that can be, how versatile he can be. I really do believe in all that. And I really do think, like, offensively, I think there is a real ceiling that honestly is really undefined and unclear right now because we haven't seen him play a single minute of college ball. But I don't know, Corey, I feel like in a couple of months from now, after watching him play some college, we're going to be pretty pleasantly surprised. So in terms of selling this pen on Jalen Duren, we're talking about a guy who is a freak athlete, a guy who has shown some real signs offensively, or is going to, in my opinion, is going to show some signs offensively, and is already a pretty high floor, high ceiling defender. That's a really exciting guy, and a guy that you have to consider, I think, at least preseason, in the top five. Now, of course, things can change, right? We might be talking about injuries. We might be talking about some regressions, or, you know, some changes here and there. We don't know for sure, which is kind of like the craziness about this whole exercise that we're doing preseason. But man, I think there's a really high ceiling here on both ends of the floor, and probably a reason why you want to look at him as a top five prospect.
It's going to be interesting charting his progress all year, man, for sure, because, you know, we went through a list of like all the bigs that, you know, fell in the top 10, and it's kind of hit or miss. And it seems like there's more miss than hit for getting value. But at the end of the day, it's like, if somebody's the real deal, right? Like, they're worth the spot, even if historically they may not be. You know, it's, we talk about outliers. We talked about them in last year. I mean, I had Alperen Şengün in my top five last year, or last draft cycle. It was like a month ago in reality. And he's like not even a traditional, like a modern day big. He's more of like the old school traditional big. So right. When we see an outlier, I don't think the recent history matters as much. And Duren has the potential to be one of these guys who can have a big impact defensively and give you really efficient offense. And that could certainly be worthy of a top five pick in this draft. It's going to be exciting to see how that plays out. Yeah. If you were buying stock in Jalen Duren, who may you have bought stock in previously?
Well, I mean, I mentioned it on our last pod, but, or two pods ago, I don't remember. Bam. You know, I think there's some real Bam potential there, of course. Like my fear is that he's not going to have the playmaking that Bam does, or, you know, maybe his jump shot never develops the way that Bam's has. But also, you know, you just mentioned how Bam's jump shot hasn't exactly developed the way that you had hoped either in terms of like his range. But yeah, I mean, he's just initially who I thought of just because of the physicality, and like, you know, you feel him. There's a tangible feeling that you get from him when he's on the court, and he's got this like aura and presence about him. Not that I've ever been on the court with him, but just from what I've seen, you know, I think that's what came to mind. Of course, it's not a perfect example, but some of that. And I mean, there are some other names that come to mind, but like, I kind of shudder to even mention them. So I'll stop there and go with Bam.
Yeah, we'll wait to mention those names during the season, right? He's putting 25 and 12s up. I love the Bam comp, and I think that when you hear that, you immediately go to the final version or the current iteration of Bam that we see today, which is this guy who could play make and take guys off the bounce, and is just a 1-5 defender and just a physical freak, and you know, all of the things that make Bam Bam. But when Bam was at Kentucky, he was not being talked about as the player that he has turned himself into. I mean, correct. If you go back and read a lot of the scouting reports, and, you know, I posted it on Twitter before the 2020 draft, because a lot of what we said about James Wiseman, about his feel, his rawness, his more of an athlete than a basketball player, all that kind of stuff that was said about Wiseman. I said, well, you know, honestly, a lot of that stuff was said about Bam, and I posted in the scouting reports. So like a lot of the worries that you might have with Duren throughout the season, that's what people were saying about Bam at Kentucky. You know, they're not the final version of what we're going to see 5-6 years from now. So I like the Bam comp as a guy that he can aspire into. I mean, more lower end, and I think that he's probably going to be a guy who produces more, just, you know, based on his, you know, the prestige of where he's being ranked early. Obviously, who knows? But like more of like a bouncy Wendell Carter. I can see a little bit. And because Wendell Carter is kind of like a poor man's Bam in some ways. He just can't stay healthy. He got a little heavier as his career has gone on, so he's a little more ground bound now. Doesn't block as many shots as you want, but he could pass a little. He could finish around the post a little. He could be a dive man a little. He could do all these things like a little bit. I think Duren is a guy that hopefully more maximizes that potential and gets to play with a good point guard. You know, that's right. Probably hampered Wendell Carter a little bit too. So it'll be fun to see him play with Suggs. Are you pumping or dumping? Changing the buy or sell up. We're going pump or dump now. New, it's a new season, Albert.
Am I pumping or dumping Jalen Duren?
Pump or dump preseason Jalen Duren.
Oh, okay, after watching. I'm not gonna pump Jalen Duren. I'm gonna pump his stock for sure. but yeah, dude, I really like Jalen Duren a lot. I'm really excited to see the development and the arc because, as you mentioned, Corey, I actually think it's so freaking important to remember the context that you just gave and laid out for our listeners. Like, we have to stop like hoping that these players are finished products in college. Like, that's the whole point of college or the G League or whatever. Like, this is just a stepping stone along the process of them getting to where they eventually want to get to. That's why, like, even like, you know, we have players that struggle in college but end up becoming good pros. Like, there's no definitive arc to how these players develop. And so I think it was really important that you said that. And I think with Duren, I'm really excited for the highs and the lows. Like, I actually want to see him struggle. I want him to have some bad games in college, and I want to see how he comes back and he recovers from those types of outings, because I think that speaks to character, right? That speaks to resiliency. Mm-hmm. That speaks to development. It speaks to coaching. Let's see how Coach K does in his final season too. Oh, wait, no. Why did I say Coach K? Now I'm thinking Apollo. My head's already going to Banchero, my bad. But, you know, like, I
Penny.
Think there's
Penny and Sheed. Penny and Sheed.
Right. I think Sheed is going to be well, who knows? I don't know what Sheed is like a coach, as like a coach, and Sheed has said some crazy things recently too. But overall, I'm excited for Duren. I'm pumping because I think he's going to have a really interesting freshman season.
Yeah, I'm still very early in this preseason scouting process, but I've watched enough of, you know, the top four, five guys now to say that I can understand why Jalen Duren is being, you know, put in the conversation with them.
Right.
I don't think he's going to be a guy who competes for the number one spot. I think a lot of things would have to go right for him to work his way into the top three, but I could see the top five buzz. It also wouldn't shock me if he dropped a little bit. But I think this season at Memphis is going to be fun if all goes well. So I'll pump his stock a little bit. I'm not emptying the chamber for him, but I think that investing early on Duren is a good move, especially because he's so young, you know, coming, you know, reclassifying, even being a year younger than he would have otherwise been if he just stayed and played out his senior year. And that brings us to his teammate. And, you know, I kind of just want to touch on Mr. Amani Bates, because he's not in the 2022 draft class, but this podcast is called The Draft Dak, not the 2022 draft Dak or the current draft, right? We can talk about prospects if they're a little further out. And Bates, the only reason that he's further out is because he was born in January of 04. So instead of, you know, whatever the cutoff is, like Duren was born November of 03. But he also reclassified to forego his senior year, 17 years old, 6'9 wing. You wish the wingspan was a little bit longer, only a 6'9 wingspan right now. But yeah, he's one of the most hyped prospects that we've had in a while, for a while. He's going to be a big story playing with Jalen during this season. I think they're going to have a lot of nationally televised game. I think Memphis, Penny, Sheed are building something with the recruits. And I figured, hey, let's have some fun and let's talk about his teammate, because, you know, a lot of Jalen Duren's success is probably going to hinge on how well Amani Bates plays. Right. So first thing, I mean, look, and a lot of people probably have a little bit of, you know, background info on Bates already because you've seen him for so long, you know, magazine covers, you know, the highlight videos, all that stuff. Dude's had his games on ESPN already. So he shouldn't be unfamiliar if you're dialed in. And if you're listening to a draft podcast in the NBA offseason right now, you're dialed in. You know this dude. But he's a shot maker. Off the bounce, off the catch, doesn't matter. Dude's putting the ball through the hole. You add that to the long, skinny frame, and you see why early on he was getting those KD comps, right? Like, he's not as long as KD.
Right.
He's not as tall, but KD wasn't as tall as he was, you know, where he is now in college. So maybe he's got a little bit of room to grow. But like all tough shot makers, he's a tough shot taker, man. And there's going to be some possessions that you wish you could get back. Where do you think that he ranks in most drafts as far as like pure shot making ability?
Shot making ability. Oh, okay. So I honestly, like, it's funny when we were prepping for this episode, I actually ended up having more notes on Bates than I even did Durin. Okay. I feel many things about Bates, but I'm going to hold myself back. I know you just wanted to touch on it. So going back to your question, I think I like that he's not shy. That's one of the things that I wrote, not shy about putting up shots. I like that he's not shy at all. I think he definitely relies on the long jumper, on the long shots, because as you mentioned, he is really damn skinny. The kid, I'm really hoping that Memphis has a solid dining hall because the kid needs to eat a lot. Like, it's a real thing for him. So the thing is, Corey, he's not shy. He's aggressive about it. He is unafraid. So I rank him pretty highly as a shot taker, shot maker. But and I will reserve my other points for next year. But yeah, there's a lot to like, but I also have a lot of question marks as well.
All right. Well, give me a little bit. Give me some of the question marks, because if you follow him at all, like, he was this guy that everybody kind of sang his praises over the last couple of years. And then over this last more recent, you know, half year, year or so, the scouts have been a little bit more iffy on whether or not Bates is actually the prospect that everybody thought he was or could be. So, and, you know, I think he's actually gone even back at some of the guys who have questioned that. And honestly, it's, you know, that's just being available on the internet. I mean, the job is for these guys to be honest. And, you know, a lot of these guys early on, they get all this hype for and all this praise. And then as the years go on and they're not getting it as much because people start picking them apart a little bit more because now it actually means something. Some of that's sometimes that's hard. So it's going to be interesting to see his resiliency through all of the attention he gets. But give me some of the question marks you have for Amani Bates.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Amani, if you're listening, we don't intend on hurting your feelings. You know, just trying to be as objective as possible. I think he's a little contact averse. Just watching him, as I mentioned, he really does settle for a lot of long jump shots, and watching him go attack the rim, it felt a little inconsistent to me. I think there really needs to be a bulking up for him, because I don't know, like, I really wasn't that impressed when he was attacking the rim. Some of the Euro steps, some of the sidestep stuff in the lane, like, it was nice, I guess, but overall it was, you know, I didn't see as much production around the rim. And I think a lot of that was like simply due to his size. I remember I was watching one of the games. I don't remember what team, obviously, like, I don't memorize
high school teams, but they switch their AAU teams all the time anyway. You know, like,
I was actually watching a high school game, and the announcer, or, you know, the play-by-play guys, they were saying, like, oh, Amani Bates is a great finisher at the rim. And I was like, you know what? Like, I actually don't agree with that. I think there has to be a lot of development for him on that end. I thought there were a lot of times that he was just avoiding contact and trying to figure out ways to not get hit at all. And so that's one of them. And then in terms of his shot, like, he kind of chucks the ball a little bit, and I'll call it for what it is. You know, I didn't see a nice follow through on a lot of the shots that I saw him taking. It just kind of felt like he was pressing the eject button and he was just letting it fly. And I don't know if I love that. And defensively, I think it's a complete wait and see for me. Like, I don't want to judge him at all defensively. I think we just need to wait a year to, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. But those are the main questions for me.
You know, it's funny because my literal next note says, I want to see him attack the rim and generate a high number of free throws. If he just turns himself into a chucker, he's a completely different level prospect.
You got to stop copying my notes, brother.
Coast to coast, copying the notes. I mean, look, guys like him, and it's in these AAU games, and I've been watching so many AAU games. They're so bad.
God bless your soul, brother. Jesus.
Let's just, like, can we stop? How do we get rid of AAU basketball? I still want to have extra games for these kids to develop, but I just want to get rid. I want to put AAU basketball into like a t-shirt cannon and just eject it somewhere, not at a crowd. That seems hurtful. But these AAU games, they're up, they're down, they're just chuck fests. And a lot of times it's like, if you're watching a prospect, don't even try to watch the defense. Don't even, it's there's no need. And really, like, you're just looking for, like, how do they move? What are they like athletically? Can they hit tough shots? Like, there's very few things I personally can take at, you know, get out of it. Although I can get enough that I keep watching it, but it sucks. It's just bad basketball. But it's easy for him to get into that habit of, and this freedom of, like, I'm going to call my number. I'm going to get my shot now. It's easy. He's the guy on all of the teams that he's in. He's the bucket getter. So just go get a bucket, right? And he plays with fire. He's feisty. But I definitely think that there are times where he settles a little too much, because when you can get to every shot seamlessly, right? Like, it's easy to do it. He has a good handle. He creates space to get these shots off. But a lot of times, like, the defense is probably cool with it. They're probably cool with it. I want him to go get to the free throw line. Use that gravity to attack. So, and, you know, he's skinny, and he'll probably always be skinny, but he also is a year younger than your typical person that would be in the 2022 class. You know, he should be going into his senior year. He was reclassifying. So developmentally, body-wise, he is a year behind. But yeah, I just want to see him show a more nuanced game, and I want to see if he can create for others a little bit more. Yeah. You know, he generates so much attention because of the scoring threat, and he's going to have, I think, some monster games in college. And I think that there were some flashes that I saw, you know, in either the high school or the AAU, like, here and there, there were, you know, flashes of passing, but is it just going to be the first read, or can he learn to hit, like, the advanced weak side reads? Cause that's what's going to make you a guy, you know, go from, like, a guy who is maybe, you know, looked at initially like a young Brandon Ingram was, who didn't really offer much but scoring, versus a guy who is going to be the next Kevin Durant, who's an all NBA player, right? That's the separation. It's all the nuance. And like you said, the defense is a wait and see. I think that he does compete during the games. AAU, everybody's taking possessions off. I'm not, you know, off the ball. It's not that he's not giving effort. I just don't know if he's always in the right spots. It's hard. I mean, it's so unstructured. These are the things that, like, I don't want to say that these kids can't do these things because they're out of position, when the whole premise of, like, AAU is, like, screw it, you know? Like, right. That's why I want to see what Penny, what she, you know, what they do for Bates and Durant. You know, because the college coaching, and then, you know, with Bates, he's going to have to choose, like, does he stay in college a second year, or does he go to the G League or the NBL or whatever? I mean, and shit, with the NIL rules, like, he might be making more money staying in college than he will going to the G League or something, you know? But yeah, the kind of stuff that they do at the AAU is not level is not going to translate defensively. And if they don't learn how to play it, then, you know, again, that's that'll be another knock on him. But he's 2 years away, so we're going to get to watch him for 2 years develop. And if he doesn't work on these things this year, regardless of what his decision is next year, he's going to hear it. The scouts mm-hmm. are going to get louder, you know, because it's not like he's going to a spot where there's not a high level lottery pick. People are going to be dialed into these games. He's a name. He's going to generate views on the TV, on the mm-hmm. the YouTubes, on the Hulu pluses, you know, all that stuff. He's going to be a name that people want to see. Duren's going to be a name, and who knows? But they're both ridiculously talented. So, you know, I think that there are going to be one of the more intriguing situations to watch, just because there's two guys on the team that are high level prospects.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Bates would really, really, really have to struggle to not be a guy who was locked in to at least a top three spot in the 2023 draft.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. I agree with you. I'm really just trying to pump the brakes a little, you know, because you and I were the same. Once we start watching, we get into this whole mode and we want to go deeper and break everything down. But I'm trying to hold back, trying to wait till next year. And, you know, let's see what happens, because, yeah, he's clearly a talented player.
I will say.
Yeah.
I've been watching a ton of Jaden Hardy.
Oh, I saw.
And we'll do an episode on him very soon. Mm-hmm. I don't feel the same way about Amani Bates shot making as I feel about Jaden Hardy shot making.
I think I agree with you on that.
And that's all I'll say. But with that said, I still enjoy watching Amani Bates hit some of these shots that he's hitting. He's got loads of talent. He looks like a Seattle Hooper out there with his shake and his shot making and stuff. So, yeah, it's gonna be interesting this year. It's gonna be interesting. I'm excited to see it. Any final thoughts on Mr. Amani Bates?
Not really, man. I think I'm excited to watch him play. You mentioned the Seattle thing. Maybe what if he just becomes like an oversized Jamal Crawford? That could be interesting too. But yeah, man, I think that's where I'm at. I'm excited to see him play this year.
Yep, me too. And you know, guys, we apologize for not doing an episode last week. The truth of the matter is that we recorded half of the episode last week, and Long Island, New York had a crazy storm, and Albert was in the middle of a beautiful soliloquy, and my internet cut out. And so we basically recorded half, finished up the other half this week, and we're putting the episode out this week. But, you know, we're going to continue to try to go every week as long as there are no technical difficulties again. Albert, tell the people where they can find you on the internet.
Well, you could find me at GTG NBA, which is my new name, Garbage Time Gim. You can also find me at Alberto Gim. I still have that old handle for nonsense. But, Garbage Time Gim, embracing my new persona.
I love it. I'm jealous of the name. I think it's an absolutely knockout name. You can find me at the Hardwood Mag on Twitter. Been posting a lot of high school breakdowns. Just dropped the Paolo Banchero scouting video. We did Chet, the Chet scouting video. We'll have an episode on all of these guys in the coming weeks. Big news coming. If you follow the draft scene, seeing some guys dropping some hints. Don't want to name names just yet, but there's some stuff in the works for sure. Your boys are going to have some merch dropping soon. I've been working on a little merch line for the Hardwood, and I figured I can't ignore the Draft Dak listeners. So we got some Draft Dak merch on the way very soon. And I'm real excited about this upcoming draft cycle and all the people we're working with and all the cool things that I think we're going to accomplish. So make sure you're dialed in, guys and girls, because it's going to be good. It's going to be good. We're going to give you that hotness this year, man. So make sure you subscribe to the pod. If you have not yet, if you're a first time listener, We would truly appreciate those 5-star ratings, the reviews. And until next time, y'all, we out. Peace.
Peace.